Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 21st day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Gary Schnittke. He'll take a look forward at the potential premiums for this year's crop insurance. I can tell you that even if we were to have the same prices and volatility as last year, you'd pay more for your crop insurance this year. Still, probably not the best of reasons, he thinks, to cut back on your coverage levels. More from Gary Schnittke as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Nearby March, corn down a penny and three quarters at $3.67 a bushel. July at $3.76 and three quarters, a penny and three quarters lower. And December at $3.89 and a quarter. A settlement price down a penny and a quarter for the afternoon. Soy complex finished the nearby contract up 4.5 cents at $8.78.5 in the March futures. The May at $8.79 up 4.25 and July up 4.25 at $8.84.25. November beans at $8.87 at a quarter, up a nickel. Bean meal up 240 at 272.20, and bean oil at 29.94, 13 cents higher. Soft red winter wheat, a gain of 3.5 cents at $4.75. July at 4.85, up 3.75, and the hard red July at 4.91 and a quarter, up 4 cents. Live cattle futures for the day in the February contract at $2.92.5, $130.17.5 the trade. January futures at $158, currently locked up the $3 limit. The March, though, up $4.47.5 at $154.20. And lean hogs in the February, 95 cents higher. They're trading at $63.67.5. The April at $68.75. They're $1.67.5 higher. Some of the outside markets, crude oil at $29.80 a barrel, $1.45 higher. Ethanol futures at $1.36. They're 0.3 cents lower. And gasoline at this time at $1.03.7 per gallon, up 2 cents for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at 90 cents even. That's 90.4 cents, rather, up 3.8 cents. Natural gas at $2.14.9 is 3.1 cents higher. This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Checking some of the other markets, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is now 131 points higher. It's at 15,849. The U.S. dollar at 99.12. That's down 0.054 for the day, and gold futures on the afternoon are currently trading at $1,101 even. They're down $5.25. The S&P at 1867.75 is up 12.5 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Mostly cloudy, a low of 18 degrees this evening, wind chills between 5 and 15 above. On a northeast wind at 6 to 11 miles an hour, it will gust to 16 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, a high of 29, wind chills between 5 and 15. North-northeast winds at 11 to 15 miles an hour, gusting to 21. Friday night, cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy, and a low of 19 degrees on a north wind at 13 to 17, gusting to 24. And for Saturday, sunny skies, a high near 30 degrees. North winds on Saturday at 7 to 11, gusting to 16 miles an hour. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 17. North winds at about 6 miles an hour, and they'll turn calm overnight. On Sunday, we'll have partly sunny skies, go to a high of 55 degrees. Those winds will be then at the from the south at 6 to 11, gusting to 16. Sunday night, mostly cloudy skies. We won't get nearly so cold, down to 25, and a chance of rain or snow on Monday as we start the work week with a high of 36 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenura of T-Storm in Chicago.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Thursday, we're joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. As usual, good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Corn did not manage to hold, but soybeans kept their gains for the day. What happened?
Well, I think the negative aspects on corn was probably your ethanol, weekly ethanol numbers. Production was down a little bit from the previous week, and stocks are beginning to build. So that kind of took the edge off of the strength that we saw early this morning. Corn futures actually made a new high for the year and now closed lower. So technically, you could call that a little minor reversal to the downside. Some of your technical indicators are up against some overbought levels. So based upon today's close, it would imply that maybe the corn market's going to spend some time in consolidation, that the market has run far enough for now, and now we're going to consolidate a little bit and kind of see what happens over in the soybean complex. Now, soybeans was able to maintain their advance, close higher, basically on dry weather or hot weather concerns in Brazil and Argentina. I don't know if it's anything serious, but anytime warm temperatures begin to set in during the critical part of the growing season, the market responds to it. And that seems to be what's happening here in soybeans. So those are the fundamental factors. Technically, both corn and soybeans, I think, on moving average front, soybeans maybe more so than corn, is getting in position to really flash several rounds of buy signals. A couple of them already been in a buy mode. I think if soybeans are able to show some follow-through on today's advance to close out the week, I think you would see a lot of buy signals, and that would probably tell me that the trade is growing more concerned about the South American crop. It's not that the South American crop is going to fall apart, but as I mentioned before, once the trade gets in its head that the crop is so big and it's got it priced in, and if it slips a million tons here and a million tons there, all of a sudden you begin to talk a little bit about some significant changes in world supply. So, and that forces the short to cover. And we've got the fund crowd fairly short, both corn and soybeans. If the market don't go down, they're going to have to force to buy their way out. And I think a lot of these moving average systems that I look at are really going to kick in some pretty good buy signals. Now, for the time being, the 100-day moving average, basically on the lead futures chart, put the brakes on the lead corn futures rally today, and we're sitting right in between the 50 and the 100-day. Now, if we don't see any follow-through to the downside on corn futures, then you would just view today's decline as just basically one of those reactions, and uptrend would probably resume. On beans is kind of the same way, but I really like new crop November soybeans. It had an outside reversal to the upside here today. It looks like we could close higher for the week. Both corn and soybeans are in position to record monthly reversals to the upside on the monthly charts. So those are all good signs technically that maybe the worst of the bearishness is behind us, but we still have to, have some things happen as we go down the road to get a good rally going. The other thing, the dollar was sharply higher the last time we spoke this morning, and it is actually slightly lower. So it's kind of got what you would call as a spike high in today's chart, and that would imply that the dollar is going to maybe trade lower tomorrow. If it did, that would be supportive to the grain complex. Crude oil futures closed strong today, and actually crude oil futures are in position to maybe have a weekly reversal to the upside after all of the early week bearishness that we've seen in the energy complex.
All right. So given all of that, and as I was listening to you, I was taking a look at some of the basis levels. They're really pretty good for both corn and soybeans at this time of year. I'm wondering if you have some ideas as to what producers ought to do for that grain that either they have in storage on the farm or in the elevator.
Well, I think producers always need to take advantage of strong basis levels, especially the kind of basis levels that we have been experiencing, more so in the eastern Corn Belt than the western Corn Belt. Basis contract is one way of taking advantage of that, and then you cross your fingers and you hope then you get the rally to price it a little higher, because if you get the rally, the odds are very good that that basis is going to widen out, so you'll lose your basis advantage. It kind of looks to me, at least for right now, that farmers are generally tight enough holders, at least for now, that a basis contract, or maybe then you'd want to sneak in and maybe put a put underneath it. That would protect you from the downside price risk. If you wanted to go outright sell it, use that premium that you're getting on the basis contract to maybe buy a summer call option to take advantage of any kind of spring rally or summer rally, that's also an option. So it all kind of depends upon what you want to do. But farmers are, they got to keep in mind that they're flat price sellers. And the strong basis level makes the flat price at least a little more attractive than what it would normally be. I know the prices ain't what they want them to be, but in order to get corn futures back to this 4.5 area, we need to reduce corn plantings, not increase corn plantings. And most everybody's got corn plantings going up a couple million. And I think the only way to reduce corn plantings is to have a real bearish February, get that December corn price, new crop December corn price down in that 350 area. And I think you would see a reduction in corn acres. And then that would lay the footings then for a good summer rally, I think, spring and summer rally. But if the market decides to rally during February and solidifies that 2 million acre increase in corn plantings, well, then just fasten your seatbelt for another bearish year unless you have adverse weather.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate it. We'll talk with you in a week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
In today's agricultural news, the Senate fell short this morning in its attempt to override a presidential veto of its resolution to repeal the WOTUS, or the Waters of the U.S. rule, that was implemented by the Environmental Protection Agency. 52 senators voted to move forward with an attempt to override Obama's veto of the resolution, short of the 60 votes needed. Even if the Senate had achieved cloture on the resolution, final passage would have required a two-thirds majority in both chambers of Congress, and that's considered a steep climb. We'll stay with the EPA. The House Agriculture Committee announced a hearing set for next week to examine the impact of the Environmental Protection Agency's actions on the rural economy. The hearing is scheduled for next Tuesday. House Ag Chairman Texas Republican Michael Conaway said farmers and ranchers who are the original conservationists are repeatedly confronted with an agency that he calls seemingly oblivious to the efforts of agriculture. Conaway said of the EPA that the agency is apparently addicted to writing regulations that ignore congressional intent, ignore the input of stakeholders, including other federal agencies, and put the United States' ability to produce food and fiber at risk. The committee has asked EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy to explain her agency's decisions and help find ways Congress and EPA can work together. From Washington, D.C., EPA and the political battles over food production will move overseas to the export area. China will likely import a record amount of soybeans this year, as crushers will turn to cheap overseas supplies to meet nearly all the demand for soybean meal. That, according to pro-farmers, first thing today. Climbing soy meal demand could prompt China to import as much as 85 million metric tons of soybeans for the 2015-16 marketing year, according to an analyst with the China National Grain and Oils Information Center, which would be an increase of 9% from the prior year. Feed mills are relying on soy products to replace other protein sources like rapeseed, distillers' dried grains, and cottonseed. Production of rapeseed and cotton are expected to fall sharply this year, and the country has launched an investigation into U.S. DDGs imported that will slow its import of the byproduct. And finally today, a little closer to home, farmers are looking for ways to save money on this year's crop expenses. One of the items University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke says they should not scrimp on is crop insurance.
Yeah, so that question has come up a number of times. And should I lower the coverage level? And in general, I would caution against that, or I'd be very skeptical of that. Because we are going to, while we're looking at low prices right now, there is a possibility that they can get lower.
Lowering crop insurance coverage levels, says Schnitke, exposes the farmer to a lot of financial risk, and that risk, he believes, outweighs the cost-cutting benefits. U.S. government-backed insurance decisions for fall harvested crops won't be made until March. We'll hear more from Gary Schnitke in just a moment. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is here to talk about his latest Farm Doc Daily posting. It's about crop insurance premiums for both this year and last year. And one of the things that producers are going to be considering at this point, especially as we look forward into 2016, Gary, is the idea that they might be able to save some cost by lowering their coverage of crop insurance. Are you for or against that idea?
Yeah, so that question has come up a number of times. And should I lower the coverage level? And in general, I would caution against that, or I'd be very skeptical of that. Because we are going to, while we're looking at low prices right now, there is a possibility that they can get lower. And if we lower the coverage levels, we'll be exposing ourselves to a lot of risk. So we could take a situation where we will have losses and make them bigger losses if we lower those coverage levels and prices do go down further than we might like.
And so we have two things to cover in the rest of this podcast. One of them is a look forward and one of them is a look back. Let's start with the look forward and your expectations across the state for the cost of crop insurance this year.
Yeah, we have updated our crop insurance decision tool for 2016 and can look at premiums for 2016. If we use the same projected price and volatility that existed last year, this year, we see higher premiums for this coming year, and those premiums are in the area of being 10 to 12% higher, 10 to 15% higher. So premiums have gone up as RMA has changed those factors. If we do have a lower projected price or lower volatility than last year, we could have the same or comparable premiums to last year, and we'll have to wait and see what the month of February brings to us as far as the projected price and volatility.
And then turn your attention to 2015. Tell me about the use of crop insurance across the state of Illinois.
Now, one of the things that we've noted in the past several years is farmers are using RP primarily, but ARP as well. Those two crop insurance policies at fairly high coverage levels, 75% higher for RP and 90% for ARP. If we look at those high coverage level revenue insurances, those accounted for roughly 80% of the acres planted in Illinois in both 2014 and 2015. So we've seen a growth in those, and we started with 0 acres of those insured in the mid-1990s to almost 80% of the planted acres being insured with revenue protection or area revenue protection at high coverage levels.
So about 72%, 72.5% of the acres in the state are covered by RP at least 75% or higher coverage levels, and ARP at the 90% coverage level, about 5.5%. What's the difference in the type of operations that decide on ARP and RP products?
Yeah, RP is a farm level insurance. ARP is a county level insurance. And we typically see larger farms go into ARP, those that have more acres spread across the country, or a county, excuse me, and also farms that are more concerned with price risk will generally find ARP more suitable for their needs than RP.
Does the distribution you see in the RP and ARP, or who takes them or what types of farm takes them, all compared to how many of those types of farms are actually in, for instance, the state or maybe in your FBFM records?
So what we see is ARP being pretty geographically centered around Sangamon County, Macon County, sort of central Illinois. So that's been where we've seen most of the use of ARP at.
And those are the places where the highest cash rents are.
That is true as well.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gary Schnittke, of course, is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read his pennies on crop insurance on the Farm Doc Daily website. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website. The address there is willag.org. And if you click over on our calendar of events, you'll see the things that we'll be covering and upcoming events like our panel in Litchfield in February and one down, or in Litchfield, that's in March, and one in February in Casey. The Herb Day that's sponsored by U of I Extension right here in Champaign County at the Wyndham Garden on Saturday of this week, which runs from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and all the details. And you'll find that our All-Day Ag Outlook is on the 8th day of March. That's Tuesday. All of the event details will be in that particular calendar event very, very shortly. So check it all out at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Granola Bar Day, and it's also International Hot and Spicy Food Day. It was John Harvey Kellogg who coined the word granola for a whole grain and nut mixture, but he never marketed the product. It was a rival, Charles Post, who once was a patient at Kellogg's Battle Creek Sanitarium, that would eventually market his own granola mix. He called it Grape Nuts. On this day in agricultural history in 1743, John Fitch was born. An American pioneer of steamboat transportation, he produced some of the nation's first serviceable steamboats. His first was an odd-looking machine. It was driven by a rack of American Indian canoe paddles, and the ship traveled at 6 to 8 miles an hour. In 1930, H.L. Collender died, an English physicist. He spent his life studying the thermodynamic properties of steam, but it was his son Guy who discovered the linkage between climate change and increases in carbon dioxide resulting from the burning of carbon fuels, part of the greenhouse effect. And in 1912, Conrad Bloch was born. He discovered that high levels of cholesterol in the bloodstream cause fatty deposits on the inner walls of arteries, which may lead to constricted blood flow and increase the chances of blood clotting and heart attack. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. It's the 21st day of January. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Mike Tenora is here from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, I know that the National Weather Service updated some numbers looking forward for the United States. What did they tell us about the weather forecast as we head closer to the springtime?
Well, probably the big takeaway from their long-range outlooks that go all the way into next winter. The most interesting feature that we noticed is that they are forecasting most of the United States, if not all the United States, to be warmer than normal over the upcoming summer. Summer is defined as June, July, and August. We tend to agree with their conclusion, but not for the same reasons. Their main reason is that they have a climate model that basically shows, after they've run it, that, hey, it'll probably end up warmer than normal across a big portion of the country based on a number of oceanic and atmospheric signals that it can analyze. So that's kind of the reason that they have their forecast. And I'm sure that a lot of that is based on some of the knowledge of the El Nino that is in place right now, but is beginning to weaken. The reason that we think it'll end up being warmer than normal during that period is partially for the same reasons. We're not going to completely ignore the climate model that's coming from the Climate Prediction Center. However, the bigger reasons are just simply looking back in time at some of the things that have been going on and what we think will happen in the future. If you just take the El Nino situation and isolate it, we know that we have a strong El Nino in place now. We know it's very likely for this situation to weaken rapidly. The El Nino will weaken rapidly into the summer. That means that by the summer, we won't have an El Nino anymore. We'll either have neutral conditions or La Nina conditions, with La Nina conditions meaning that the ocean is a bit colder than normal out in the middle of the Pacific. So we know that when we transition from El Nino to either neutral or La Nina conditions over the course of a 6 to 9 month period, we end up with hot Augusts almost always. We've seen that 9 out of 10 times since 1960. So we think there's a pretty high probability for the end of the summer to end up warmer than normal. Now, we still have to deal with June and July, and there it does get a little bit trickier. Just the El Nino alone does not give real strong odds for either June or July to be warmer than normal. We have seen some warm summers in this scenario, probably the most obvious ones being 1983, 1988, and 1995. Those were some pretty poor crop years, but there were other crop years that did not end up in the same situation with intense heat and drought. But that aside, we do have one other feature that's been taking place. If you think back to September, you might remember that we ended the month of August fairly cool, then suddenly it turned hot. It basically stayed warmer than normal all the way up until about 10 days ago, and now it's a little bit cooler. Well, unless February ends up being a lot colder than normal, which seems pretty unlikely at the moment, we'll end up having experienced one of the 10 warmest September through February periods on record. And following that, 6 of the 10 since 1895 were much warmer than normal, with 8 of 10 having been warmer than normal through the June, July, and August period in the U.S. Corn Belt. That's kind of the reason that we think that summer heat is going to be an issue later on this year, and it's something that we'll have to watch.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us, Mike. We do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. You have a great afternoon, and I'll talk to you next week.
Mm-hmm. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.